Thank you for helping us make budget again last year. Thanks to your support, Lutheran Public Radio has been independent and in the black for almost 6 years. You've heard us say, now only our listeners can cancel us, and we mean it. Thanks for listening, thanks for your prayers, and thanks for your financial support. Christ-centered, cross-focused talk radio for the world, issues, etc., and sacred music for the world, LutheranPublicRadio.org. We're looking forward to partnering with you in 2014. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. For the last 10 minutes of the program, we're going to spend some time talking with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse about a government study showing an increase in cohabitation. That doesn't surprise anybody. And a decrease in the so-called shotgun wedding. I guess all the social pressure, the social taboo against cohabitation has almost completely evaporated. So what is it? Is cohabitation now considered just an alternate form of marriage or family or parenting? It's hard to tell. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is a regular guest. She's founding president of the Ruth Institute, based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she is author of the books Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Jennifer, welcome back.
Hey, Todd. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Thanks for having me back.
This is what Christina Gibson Davis, a sociology professor at Duke University, had to say in response to the government study we're going to be talking about here. The emergence of cohabitation as an acceptable context for childbearing has changed the family formation landscape. Individuals still value the idea of a two-parent family, but no longer consider it necessary for those parents to be married. What's she saying, and what's your reaction?
Well, first, what she's saying there is she's stating an obvious fact. Anybody can observe that people's attitudes toward cohabitation have changed, and she's stating the obvious. What she isn't saying is that there are risks, there are hazards associated with cohabitation. And in fact, in the next paragraph of this article you're quoting from, she tries to tell the reporter that, and the reporter won't mention any of it in the story. Let me read with the report what she says. She says, still, she cautions, she meaning Christina Gibson Davis, still, Gibson Davis cautions that children in cohabiting households may face more difficulties growing up if their unmarried parents are at higher risk of breaking up. Well, no kidding. And we already know that there's no if about it. Cohabiting unions do break up at higher rates than married unions. And so, therefore, to try to sugarcoat this thing is simply irresponsible reporter on the part of this Associated Press reporter.
Cohabitation has kind of been popularly justified, maybe even in some cases sold, as a remedy for an out-of-control divorce rate. How'd it work out?
Well, that's actually, it's putting the cart before the horse kind of a thing, you know, because if you were trying to prevent divorce, the last thing you would do would be to move in with your boyfriend, right? Because if you have any idea that you want to get married and stay married, we already know that moving in with your significant other prior to marriage is more creates a higher probability of divorce, not a lower probability of divorce. And in fact, when you move in with somebody, you don't know that that's the person you're going to marry. You could end up cohabiting multiple times with different people. And that's what this story is completely glossing over, you know, that what they're trying to say in this story overall, Todd, is that when a couple gets pregnant, an unmarried couple gets pregnant, it used to be that they thought, gee, we better get married. Well, now they're saying, gee, we better move in together, right? And they're saying, well, that's sort of the same thing, and it's not that big of a deal, and so on. But the reality is that if you are an unmarried woman and you give birth to a child, the odds are great that your next child will be born with a different man, right? And so that relationship churning is the thing that turns out to be so problematic for children and therefore for women too, because women care about their children, obviously. So it's having the unrelated adult male in the household that causes all kinds of problems. And that's what these couples that they're interviewing here are having their first baby. And they're not looking down the pike at the risk that that guy's going to move out and then you're going to move in with a new guy. And what's going to happen to the child from the first relationship? You won't see Yahoo News stories about that. You won't see the Associated Press talking about that. And that's what's really upsetting to me about this story. I think Christina Gibson Davis was trying to tell this reporter this is not a rosy thing here, but the reporter isn't having any of it, you know, and I think that's just irresponsible.
What do you make of the term that is used? I was kind of surprised the term shotgun wedding was used in the article, at the very least, the reporting on this, as kind of a, I don't know, term of art. What do you make of that term?
Well, I mean, that's an old term, right? I mean, and it's in a sense, it's become kind of an archaic term because nobody any longer expects that your father is going to force you to get married and, you know, sit there with a shotgun and force the guy to marry you. Your father's more likely to tell you, well, go get an abortion, you know, and if this guy is a real gentleman, he'll pay for the abortion, you know, kind of thing. So that the phenomenon of the shotgun wedding has been declining, and it took its biggest decline after the introduction of abortion on demand. That's what really changed that particular dynamic. And so the idea that people are moving in together when they have a baby, rather than aborting the baby, that's a good thing, right? But, you know, gee, it would be intelligent to have a backup plan for contraceptive failure. And that's the thing that nobody's really tracking here. You know, in a sense, you could trace this all back to the contraceptive culture, which says that sex is intrinsically a sterile activity. You're entitled to have as much sex as you want without ever planning for or expecting a baby to arrive. And so, gee, if you have a contraceptive failure, oh my gosh, we're surprised every time, you know. Rather than saying, you know, gosh, every time we have sex, we could have a baby. Why don't we pick out a suitable person to have sex with and alleviate a lot of those problems before they even happen by only having sex with somebody that you feel okay about being a parent with? You know, that thought process is what has shifted and has been shifted deliberately by the elite opinion makers of this culture. So this story is just one more thread in kind of creating that overall picture of what human sexuality is and how we're supposed to behave.
I have to get your reaction to a paragraph in the middle of this story. And this is quoting Leigh Pulte. She's got all the experience of 22 years, Austin, Texas. She says, "I want to marry when I'm ready, not because I'm being forced into it. Whenever I see couples do that, things don't work out." This is Amanda Leigh Pulte speaking. She has 11-month-old daughter Zoe cooing in her arms. She said she had previously delayed moving in with her boyfriend of 3 years until she could earn a bachelor's degree in film and start a full-time job. Take that apart, if you would.
Well, you know, first of all, she's been going with this guy. It mentioned she's 22 and the guy's 29. Okay, that doesn't sound so bad, but if she's been going with this guy for 3 years, that means she was 19 and he was 26. That kind of does sound not so great, right? I mean, it sounds mildly, at least mildly exploitive by the older man against this woman. And, you know, the wisdom that she has here, as you were calling it, whenever I see couples do that, things don't work out, right? In her 22 years of experience on this planet, you know, she's got this all figured out from seeing the people around her. So, you know, I'm not sure what she thinks, that what counts as being forced. That's the real operative thing. She's moved in with this guy, which has a lot of the same risks and problems associated with marriage, but she doesn't have the commitment, and she doesn't have a commitment from him, you know, that they're going to stick together through thick and thin. And the baby doesn't have a commitment from the two of them that their union is a priority, right? And so from the baby's point of view, let's think about the baby. The baby has a legitimate interest in the union of those two adults who brought her into being, right? And there's no attention at all given to that point, right? So there's just so much. This is just a high-gloss propaganda piece is what this is, Todd. You know, this is like a glossy thing that you hand out to somebody to persuade them to stay for a night at your hotel because it's so wonderful, and you don't you know, show the photos of what the bathroom actually looks like, because you don't want people looking too closely. I mean, that, there's just so much that's not said in this article, and that can't be said when you give more time to a 22-year-old than you give to the professor of sociology from Duke University, which is basically what this story does.
Now, laying aside all moral religious considerations, you have emphasized here that these are bad ideas not because they are wrong morally, but because they have bad outcomes, just statistically, just demographically.
Right.
These kind of situations, having children outside of marriage, cohabiting instead of marriage, delaying marriage in this case, sometimes never even considering it a prospect, these have negative societal and individual outcomes, don't they?
Well, that's right. And, you know, since you brought up religion, I'll just mention, as a Roman Catholic, I'm not surprised about that, because we tend to look at things from a natural law perspective in addition to a biblical theological perspective. And the way we look at it is that God has told us to do certain things because it's going to be for our good. You know, Jesus knew that these kind of things were going to be happening. That's what he's trying to protect us from, these outcomes, right? So that the moral law and good outcomes and common sense should really all work together. And indeed, they do all work together. Any issue that you look at that has to do with marriage and family and childbearing, it just turns out that the ancient teachings of the Christian church turn out to be better than all of the modern things that are being offered to us, you know. And so the purveyors of the sexual revolution, if you, for want of a better term, I never know quite what to call these people, but the sexual revolutionaries, you know, really have to keep their thing going with a whole lot of continual propaganda in order to paste over and to cover all of these negative outcomes, in order to keep the victims, the people who have been harmed by previous rounds of the sexual revolution, those people have to be kept quiet, and they have to be kept from connecting the dots between what they did and what was sold to them and the outcome that they actually got, you know. And this piece is just another propaganda piece that is designed to do that very thing. It's designed to keep you and your listeners and anybody else who opens Yahoo News, it's designed to keep them from looking too closely at whether marriage actually amounts to anything substantial that you ought to aspire to and plan for, and that you really ought to save sex for marriage because of all these reasons, you know, because of all of these better outcomes that you get if you do. This piece is designed to throw smoke in your eyes so you won't look too closely.
Jen, with about 30 seconds here before we let you go, tell us about this one-day conference and retreat coming up on February 15th in Carlsbad, California.
Well, that's right. We're having a conference. We call it Healing the 21st Century Family, and we are specifically addressing the victims of the sexual revolution, people who feel they've been victimized by the sexual revolution, such as somebody who cohabited too long with their boyfriend and then the boyfriend took off when she was 35. You know, those kind of stories that you never hear about, such as children of divorce, people who've been reluctantly divorced, all these kind of people who have been harmed by the sexual revolution. We are going to invite people to come join us in sunny Southern California, where it's 70 degrees today. Just throwing that out there. That we're inviting you to come out here, and we'll spend a one-day intense but relaxed, fun retreat dealing with all of these issues, helping people to heal from the craziness that has been inflicted on all of us by the sexual revolution. So we hope people will go to ruthinstitute.org and look for the Healing the Family conference logo and click on it, and you can sign up right there.
Folks, you can also find out more about the Healing the 21st Century Family conference, February the 15th in Carlsbad, California, under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morris is a founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the book Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Jennifer, thanks.
Thanks.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll talk with Wesley Smith about attempts to remove life support from a 13-year-old brain-dead girl in California. And on Friday, we'll visit with Raisa Aslan. He's the author of that book called Zealot, The Life and Times of Jesus of Nazareth, the book where he says Jesus was not what Christianity claims he was. He was just a political zealot. We'll talk with the author of that book. Also on Friday, We'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Year. The winners from all the soundbites, the best soundbites from Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week, we'll narrow them down and we'll pick Soundbite of the Year Friday on Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening. I'll talk with you tomorrow.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Thank you for helping us make budget again last year. Thanks to your support, Lutheran Public Radio has been independent and in the black for almost 6 years. You've heard us say, now only our listeners can cancel us, and we mean it. Thanks for listening, thanks for your prayers, and thanks for your financial support. Christ-centered, cross-focused talk radio for the world, Issues Etc., and sacred music for the world, LutheranPublicRadio.org. We're looking forward to partnering with you in 2014.